98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Weekly Blast.
On the last possession of overtime, Devin Booker got the ball and he got the call. It was everything we've wanted for the past 5 years. Close games against really good teams and some real respect from the NBA officials. A fabulous victory against one of the best teams in the East. It was all there in the game. But I'm going to stir the pot here just a little bit because I'm a little worried about the aesthetics of what I'm seeing. Devin Booker is great and all, but for whatever reason, he is not making all the big shots at the end of games. He's not exactly the endgame assassin I once imagined when I thought about the Suns getting onto bigger platforms. Sometimes Booker even struggles to get his shot off against elite defenders like last night. Now, I never thought there'd come a day when you might have more worries about Booker down the stretch than we are with DeAndre Ayton, but last night it was Ayton who came up with all the key defensive stops. In fact, Ayton outlasted the two-time MVP, and Giannis missed the final 4 minutes of overtime with a cramp. Now, either way, I think the Suns need to rethink their strategy just a little bit, such as reversing the endgame structure so that Chris Paul has the ball. Let a Hall of Fame point guard distribute from a position of strength, and then we can all reassess once the regular season is over. All right, today's Bickley Blast brought to you by my great friends at Chapman BMW. Test drive the ultimate driving machine at the newly renovated Chapman BMW in Chandler, at Chapman BMW on Camelback. Find them online at ChapmanBMW.com.
Man, it's like you were zoning in on a text thread I had with a buddy of mine last night.
Is that right?
About the very same situation.
Okay, so it kind of struck you the same way.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now, Devin Booker last night in the fourth quarter, 3 of 5, 7 points, played well. In the overtime, he hit one of his two shots and one of his two free throws, and he missed that second free throw on purpose. It wasn't necessarily because of output. It was more for me the optics of that final possession in overtime, which ended up working out ultimately for the Suns. But it was with how much time left, put the ball in Devin Booker's hands, and we're just going to ISO and let him do his thing.
Right.
And it was very, very little in terms of play creation. And Drew Holiday is a spectacular on-ball defender.
Yeah.
And had P.J. Tucker not made the foolish decision to come over and help and slap the arm of Devin Booker, we might be talking about a loss right now.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought Holiday had him locked up. There was no need for any assistance on that play. And had that foul not occurred, Booker wouldn't have even got the shot off before the expiration of the clock. It was a little frustrating. And, you know, in years past, okay, that made sense. But I agree with you. I'm putting the ball in Chris Paul's hands at the end of the game. If it ends up in Devin Booker's hands as a second option, fine.
So be it. Yep.
Leave it up to one of the most accomplished distributors of the basketball ever to make that determination. My concern now last night with Devin Booker was, more of the early game performance. He's been productive, still led the team in scoring last night. He did hit some big shots, but there were stretches last night where I thought he looked like he was pressing offensively.
Yeah, right. And that's what I'm saying. There's something a little bit off in terms of how Devin Booker is performing on a night-by-night basis. Now, again, this is just a little adjustment. This is not grenade-worthy criticism here, folks, so don't misinterpret. But I think that is probably the way to go. I've seen this a few times now in some of these endgame situations. Devin Booker is a great scorer, but he's not the greatest athlete in the league, and he can't rise up above people routinely. He has to work very hard and in a very physical way. And last night, you saw that endgame thing go down in real time. He had Holiday on him. They tried to screen off. Chris Paul tried to sucker them into getting DiVincenzo onto Devin Booker. Holiday just busted through the screens both times, and Devin Booker was going nowhere. He could not even get within 30 feet of the basket, and that is when the flag went off my head and said, there's got to be a better way than this. This is not what you want, because that was really settling for not a good shot, and you got bailed out because P.J. Tucker did something really stupid. Now, props to Devin Booker for making the free throw. My second favorite moment of the game last night occurred when he got on that free throw line, and all those guys from the Bucks did little drive-bys, chirping at him. The stuff that happens before extremely high leverage situations at the free throw line. I love that. Just guys doing whatever they can in a desperate situation to get inside someone's head. Right? And it didn't happen. But I think the best way to do it, you're going to want to make sure that you get better shots. And I'm doing a complete flip on this. I understand that. Originally, I was the one who said, get some structure down in these endgame situations, put the ball in Devin Booker's hands, and let him carry us to a championship. It's the moment he's been waiting for his entire life. It's not looking the way I thought it was going to look. It's harder on him than I thought it was going to be. You got a guy in Chris Paul who has no issue breaking anybody off a dribble. Let him find the open guy. I think the Suns should go that route from here on out.
I'll say this, and I know it's the tendency. When you have a player of the offensive skill set of Devin Booker around the league, you're going to empower him in those late-game situations. Here you go. Make something happen. You're our best player. Make the best play. It's a heck of a lot easier to defend it when you know that that ball's not going to move.
It is. It is. And if Devin Booker could produce really good looks at the basket all the time in those situations, I wouldn't be changing my mind on this. But I've seen a lot. I've seen him struggle now to shake guys.
But so would you trust Chris Paul to make the right decision to find the open man, which he would? But that open man could be Jay Crowder or Mikal Bridges or something taking the final shot of the game.
The key there is open. If Jay Crowder's taking a contested three, no, that's no good.
Right.
If the defense can be manipulated by Chris Paul to find an open man, those guys are out there for a reason. Now, Jay Crowder hit big shots. Mikal Bridges hit big shots in that game last night.
And yet, Jay Crowder took one ill-advised three late in that game.
He did.
So that's the danger. That's the danger of it. And that you have to kind of avoid that. That's a real balancing act a team and a coach has to have in terms of putting some sort of ground rules down on endgame situations.
But we've talked about it. Others have talked about it. The Suns are in a unique position because of two endgame closers.
Right.
Exploit it. Yeah.
I think that's
give them something to think about.
I think that's the way to do it.
Wait a minute. We thought Booker was going to get an isolation here. Chris Paul's got the ball. What's going on?
Yeah.
They could go any number of ways here.
Yeah. So we were seeing the same things as far as that goes. I thought Mikal Bridges was extremely solid last night. I thought it was fascinating. Dario Saric is continuing to struggle. Like, the minute the ball leaves his hands, you can see it's going to hit the front of the rim. And I don't know whether he's lost some juice in his legs or if he's got a hitch in his mechanics, as EJ, I think, brought up last night. But they need to, and you brought this up, I also believe at some point in time they need to maybe look at Torrey Craig in terms of a bigger role.
Well, I do believe that moving forward. Last night was interesting because Giannis is such a weird matchup, and then you have Brook Lopez in the starting lineup as well. So that was the necessity for Dario Saric to be the second big to start. I think it was fully matchup-based. But when you don't have a true backup five that you can rely on right now and you're playing Saric at the four, it really kind of took a while to get that rotation set. I mean, the Suns' need for another big was really on display last night, in my opinion, and that's even with Ayton playing well. Ultimately, I don't have a problem with Jay Crowder coming off the bench, and I love what Torrey Craig brings this team. I think he plays much bigger than his 6'7". And he'll play some small ball five, depending on the lineups. That might be something to look forward to, but I mean, it might be nitpicky. I mean, they're 41-16 at this point.
But that's, you got to be nitpicky though if you're trying to be a championship team.
Yeah, I mean, this is again. These Suns fans just trip me out to no end. You've got to look at yourself very self-critically if you're going to present a championship team. And I know that might come as news to people who haven't seen the playoffs in 10 years, but that's what happens. And this is something to me that I do think bears watching and bears addressing, because end game situations make all the difference in the NBA playoffs, all the difference. You have to assume that 95% of your playoff games are coming down to the final 5 minutes.
You have to assume it. And in that late game situation, the Suns thrived. Here was Chris Paul talking about rallying after being down 7 late.
Man, it was everything. You know, I think that's been the funnest thing about our season all year is that it's really a team. You know what I mean? The big shots, you know what I mean? I think a lot of times everybody expects something to come from me or Book, but Jay hit the big three in the corner. Kale hit the big three. D.A. in his fight. Everybody plays a part, you know, when we win games.
Yeah, Devin Booker spoke about the confidence building that was included, attached to this win.
I think it's big for us. You know, I think it's the right way to start off this trip. I think it's great energy moving into, you know, our next games. We knew going into this trip it was not going to be an easy game. So anyone that we can grind out like that, you know, however we get it, you know, that's how we want to do it. So, you know, that's our plan moving forward. But, you know, winning, like Coach Mont said, winning makes the food taste better. Winning makes tomorrow better at practice. So I think we have good energy moving into our next one.
All right, let me ask you this. You go play Philadelphia next tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
You win that game. Do you toy sitting Chris Paul against Boston? Back-to-back games, 3 really tough teams right in a row. Do you think about it? You get off to a 2-0 start in this?
I think about it, but if I'm Monty Williams, I'm still presenting it as an option, and Chris Paul is going to make the ultimate call on that.
Yeah.
There's something to be said for rest. There's something to be said on the other side of it. If you get 2 wins against Milwaukee and Philly, and you're getting closer to that number one seed, why are you even taking your foot off the gas for a game?
I know. Because sometimes you do it, and your team actually responds, and the other team lets their guard down. And
they say this in football all the time. If you go out there playing not to get hurt, what happens?
You get hurt. Listen, I know. I'm with you. And I it really pains me to even say that because I cannot stand this trend in basketball. I just don't want the Suns to pay for not doing what other teams do.
Yeah, that's what we brought it up. You know, we've come almost full circle on this now, where a lot of people attached and around the Suns are asking, would that be the prudent thing to do? When I think ultimately it bothers everybody that has, you know, an interest in the NBA. Kendrick Perkins, ESPN basketball analyst, was on with Doug and Wolf this morning. He gave his thoughts on the idea of resting players.
Well, you know what? When it comes down to the Suns, I wouldn't mind, like, you know, them managing, you know, Chris Paul and Devin Booker and even DeAndre Ayton down the stretch, Jay Crowder. Like, I wouldn't do it all in one game, but if here and there guys are, you're able to spare a guy a game and let him get his legs up under him, I would do that. I would do that. I don't see nothing wrong with that, because one thing about it is that you can look at the schedule ahead of time and say, okay, we may be playing the Orlando Magic. This may be the time to give Chris Paul and Jay Crowder a break. And then you can look down the line and say, we're playing the Sacramento Kings, all right? And now let's give DeAndre Ayton and Devin Booker a break.
The things about this are, first of all, as long as the one seed is still in play, it's so hard to justify not giving your full roster out there to try to win every game. And the second thing is, it's hard to look at anything on the schedule and say it's a gimme win, because the teams they struggle against are the bad teams.
That's another great point.
Yeah. But the more I think about it, if you do go 2-0 to start the road trip, it would be very unlike this team to just stop. It'd be like Torrey Lovello sitting Paul Goldschmidt during the midst of a hitting streak. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's something that I wish was not even in our conversation, but it's something you do have to consider at some point in time. Or maybe you don't. Maybe you just don't. Maybe you look at Chris Paul and say he's special because he's special, and we're not going to compromise what makes him who he is by making him sit down.
Yeah, I mean, playing 38 minutes last night of, you know, 53, that wasn't ideal.
No,
going into overtime wasn't ideal for a team that might be tinkering with this idea. Kendrick Perkins also talked about, look, I feel it, and I think you know, if Frank Kaminsky could work himself back into a role where he could be relied upon as he was earlier in the year, and I know he's coming off the long COVID stretch and he got some late game garbage time minutes the other night against San Antonio. Nothing went right, and certainly nothing went right in the garbage time for Frank Kaminsky, you know, missing four free throws. That would be, in a lot of ways, a godsend for Monty Williams to have another big that he could rely on. So I still think that is a need. Might not be able to do anything about it at this point, but Kendrick Perkins doesn't think there's really any needs with this team.
So when you look at DeAndre Ayton, Devin Booker, Bridges, who I love so much, and all the other young pieces, I'm like, they have everything. They're not lacking at nothing except a little bit of experience. But winning a game like last night in Milwaukee against a Bucks team who was desperate to get a win after getting blown out two nights ago, I was like, the way that they hung in there and kept battling, that's enough. That's the type of experience and type of test that you need that gets you ready for the postseason, because the postseason is right around the corner.
Yeah, I agree with that, especially coming off the heels of that San Antonio game. One more from Kendrick Perkins. We're talking a lot about the Suns' pursuit of some postseason awards. This on the Coach of the Year race.
No, it is money.
Yeah.
I mean, it is why. I'm not taking anything away from Tom Thibodeau, Nate McMillan, Doc Rivers.
Mm-hmm.
But when you look at where the Phoenix Suns were, they weren't even in the postseason for the last two or three years. And now you get to the postseason and you're a top two team in the Western Conference, a top three or four team in the NBA. That's something to be proud of. And that says a lot about culture and coaching, because that means guys are playing winning basketball. And when you look at the Phoenix Suns, defensively, they rank, top seven in every statistical defensive category. That's coaching. Offensively, they're going to do what they do. But when you look at when you see a team that's bought in defensively, then that's coaching. And I think Monty Williams deserved a Coach of the Year.
I made that claim last week. That's where I am. I know there's other – he didn't even bring up Quinn Snyder. I mean, there's other – really viable candidates for Coach of the Year.
Yeah.
But I just think what the leap the Suns have made is the most impressive to me.
Right. To me, I look at Quinn Snyder and I say, nah, that ain't it. They were good last year. I know Monty Williams is doing a great job, but it's not like he's lifting the same team he had last year when they weren't a playoff team. They added Chris Paul and Jay Crowder to their starting lineup. But I do think Monty Williams should get it. I think Tom Thibodeau's got a very compelling story too, with the way the Knicks are playing. I think James Jones to me is the runaway winner. I think Monty Williams is going to be the winner by a nose kind of thing. And we'll see if Chris Paul can get some MVP consideration before it's all said and done.
By the way, did you see Kendrick Perkins' tweet last night in the wake of what Steph Curry did in that game against Philly? 49 points, 10 threes again, 20 points in the fourth quarter. Warriors beat the Sixers. So famously, Perkins got into a shouting match while he was in street clothes when he was with the Cavs with Steph Curry in the playoffs. Kendrick Perkins tweeted out, "Hey, Steph Curry, anything I've ever said negative about you, I apologize, sir. What you are doing on the court in the game of basketball is beyond legendary. Another 49-piece spicy with the win."
It's what's beautiful about him is just how fast he gets a shot off after a screen. It's just lethal. I know you've seen these stats, but a couple of these just blow my mind. Last five games, he's averaging 44.8 points per game. That's insanity. Steph Curry has got 26 career games with 10 or more made three-pointers, including six this year alone. No other player in NBA history has more than five in their career. Wow.
It's unbelievable. It's sort of a reminder that he is one of the best players in the NBA after a year of him gone, and then probably the first two-thirds of this year where the team was irrelevant.
Yeah. And a lot of people squawking that, see, he's not so good. If you don't put him all these all-stars around him, he's not at all that. Yeah, he is.
There was a reminder early in the season, like, because of the injury, the pandemic, Golden State not being in the bubble, all of those things, I think he fell off the radar a little bit. I think people forgot, even though he burned so brightly for 3 or 4 years, just how good he was at basketball. And even now we're seeing this unbelievable MVP-level play from him. His team is still 29-29.
Wow.
And they're still in the mix to get, you know, they're in good position now, but
yeah,
we've seen them crater as well and go into slumps. He is an amazing basketball player, though.
Yeah, an amazing shooter. Yeah. He's just nothing like him.
Utah got a big win last night without Donovan Mitchell. They beat the Lakers in L.A. 111-97 with Joe Ingles in the starting lineup. It's always good when you lose your best offensive player and then you can plug Joe Ingles into the starting lineup, yeah. A guy who's got like setting records for three-point efficiency this year. Mm-hmm. He hit 5 of 8 last night.
Yep.
So Utah is not turtling with Donovan Mitchell out. Denver last night had to go double overtime. You mentioned it earlier in the show, Bic. They beat Memphis 139-137. They're hanging tough without Jamal Murray and leaning even more heavily on Nikola Jokic, who, did you see that stat line?
Oh, my goodness.
20 of 31, 47 points, 15 rebounds, 8 assists, 7 turnovers.
7 turnovers? Wow.
He is ridiculous. And I'm sensing, like, all these names that are coming up for MVP consideration.
Mm-hmm.
To me, right now, and it would have been a debate before Embiid went down for the stretch that he went down in, and he's been tremendous all year when he's been on the court, but Jokic has been out there all year. To me, if you're voting today, it's a one-horse race. I think Jokic is the runaway MVP, but there seems to be a lot of resistance to that on NBA Twitter.
I wonder what that's all about, because he doesn't feel like an MVP candidate. I don't know. I don't know what it is. But you're right, in terms of how complete his game is.
Maybe because
there's no name value to him.
Yeah, he's new, like as an MVP candidate. Two, maybe they don't view Denver as a championship team. I don't know. He's not, the way he plays is not as flashy as like a James Harden or Giannis or something like that.
If you want flat, he's one of the best passers in basketball. And I love a flashy pass, and he can make those.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just also fascinated by, this has always been the case for me. Not always, but a lot of times in my life as a consumer of sports, if I'm asked to make predictions, I get bored, so I'll take a chance on somebody.
Take a contrarian view?
I took Jokic for MVP going into last year. I'm always a year ahead of this stuff.
Wow. How about that?
Boy, if only betting were legal last year, you would have.
Then again, I also picked Carson Wentz as the MVP of the NFL last year. So look out this year. Carson Wentz, Indianapolis Colts MVP.
This is the year Christian.
Bet the kids' college fund on it.
This is the year Christian Kirk leads the league in
put
receptions.
Put it in the college fund.
All right, coming up next, we'll talk some NFL draft. We'll speak to Dane Brugler, NFL draft analyst for The Athletic. That's next. Bickley and Murata, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Couple of numbers to throw at you. 267 pages, 415 scouting reports, 636 prospect rankings, all part of what they call the beast on The Athletic, and the man that puts together their comprehensive draft preview, Dane Brugler, joins us here on the Colter Automotive Group Sports Line. Dane, thanks so much for the time. We appreciate it.
Yeah, of course. Good afternoon, guys.
Every year when this comes out, I just open up the file and I just marvel at the amount of work and detail that's in it. So once again, congratulations to you, sir.
Thank you. It's a year-round process. So, you know, there's a lot that goes into it. You know, at my heart, I'm an NFL draft fan. So I try to create something that I would enjoy, that I would find useful. And basically, the easy sell job is, if you like the NFL draft at all, 0% chance you'll be disappointed by what's in this guide. And so hopefully people have it by their side during draft weekend when these picks actually are made. And anything you want to know about the player will be in that guide.
All right, we think we know the first two quarterbacks are Trevor Lawrence and Zach Wilson. What do you have afterwards in terms of how you rank them?
Well, and how I would rank them is Trey Lance 3, Justin Fields 4, and Mac Jones 5. But just going based off of what several people who I talk to, who I trust in the league, they believe Mac Jones could be the favorite, is the favorite at number three. Now, I think it's fair to point out that really Kyle Shanahan, maybe John Lynch are the only people that really know. I think there's members of that 49ers coaching staff who are kind of curious, just like us, who do not know who it'll be. And obviously the 49ers traded up from 12 to 3 with a specific quarterback in mind, but they've been attending pro days for each one of these guys. Has anything happened in the last 3 weeks that maybe changed their mind a little bit? I don't. This isn't a case of, you know, they're smoke screening or they're just being, it's just due diligence. They're making sure they have the right guy by doing all this work. I mean, it's the smart thing to do. It makes sense. So it'll be really interesting if we get any other tells between now and next Thursday. But sure seems like Mac Jones is the favorite.
Now, we've known Trevor Lawrence is the number one pick of this draft for quite some time. But starting with two at Wilson and putting all those quarterbacks, Wilson, Lance, Fields, Jones, when you group them together through your eyes, Dane, how small is the gap between those four guys?
Me personally, I have Zach Wilson at two. I think there's a little bit of a gap after him, and then Trey Lance, and then a very small gap behind him to get to Justin Fields. Those top four quarterbacks, pretty closely rated as top 10 guys, and type of quarterbacks that you're going to take a chance on. We know history tells us that of those four, two probably won't live up to where they're drafted. Mm-hmm. That's just what history tells us. But you still want to take a swing. You want to take a chance, and you want to take a chance on a guy with traits, and all four of these guys have a lot to offer at the next level. And then Mac Jones, he's a little bit lower for me, but I understand the intrigue with him. And, the simple way to put it is if you list the top two qualities that you want at the quarterback position, where do you start? Accuracy, decision-making. And that's where Mac Jones is, that's the strength of his game. That's where he's above some of these other guys. And you just have to figure out, okay, is he good enough in those other areas, talking about mobility and arm strength and all these other variables that it takes to play the position at a high level. So the answer to that question will be different for everybody, just in terms of what they value at the position. And looking at Kyle Shanahan, an offense that he runs that is based so much on timing and anticipation and the mental processing side of things, you can at least understand why he might prefer a Mac Jones over these other two guys.
What do you think of Trevor Lawrence coming out and talking about things such as life balance and the fact that he doesn't need to play with a chip on his shoulder, kind of attacking that stereotype or prototype, whatever it is? Do you think that's going to affect the way some people look at him, or do you think we're finally past that in the NFL?
It was a little bit of a shame that I didn't think he should have to do that. I don't think he's given any reason, concrete reason to doubt that he's serious about the game, that type of thing. It's tough for evaluators because there have been plenty of quarterbacks in the past who, they walk the walk, they talk the talk, and, they do everything in the quarterback playbook that would lead you to believe they're all in, but then they get to the NFL and, they don't work as hard. Yep. Or, they're more focused on everything else that goes with the position, whether it's the money or just all the different responsibilities. So, I get some of, some teams, why they're, just very guarded against this and why they have to be sure. A guy, Paxton Lynch, a few years ago out of Memphis. I mean, John Elway knows more about quarterbacks than, me or you guys combined. Mm-hmm. And he had no problem rolling the dice on Paxton Lynch in the first round, saying, you're the future of our franchise. Turns out Paxton Lynch, didn't love his football as much as you need to be the CEO of a football team. And that was why he never really got on the field and why he's not currently in the NFL. So, with a guy like Trevor Lawrence or any of these quarterbacks, I think it's fair to want them to be all about football all the time. But it's also, I think, fair to want them to be balanced human beings and have a balanced lifestyle where you have an escape, whether that's family or whether it's different hobbies and different interests. I think that's fine. But, you have to make sure that they're passionate about the game and everything that it takes to play the quarterback position at a high level. And that's where it gets a little tricky for evaluators.
Dane Brugler of The Athletic, our guest here on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line. As far as the Arizona Cardinals at 16, we know their needs. They need a wide receiver. need a corner, a couple of other needs. Anything can happen. We know that. But what do you think, if they stay at 16, Dane, what do you think their realistic options in terms of personnel will be there for that pick, considering their needs?
Well, if one of those two Alabama receivers falls to 16, I think it makes a pretty easy decision for them. Devontae Smith, Jalen Waddle, both belong in the top 10 to 12 picks. They shouldn't fall that far, but you never know. CeeDee Lamb wasn't supposed to fall to the 17th pick last year, yeah. And the Cowboys made sure he didn't fall to the 18th pick. Mm-hmm. So I think if you're the Cardinals, you have to at least, that's at least a scenario that could play out. And if it does, it makes too much sense in the world for that to happen. If the Alabama receivers are off the board, then I think probably shifting towards defense. But it also depends how the first 15 picks play out. Mm-hmm. You can bet that five quarterbacks go in the first 15 picks. So that means that 10 position players are going to come off the board, and so there's a good chance that maybe there's a few surprises, which could push a good player to your spot at 16. I think there's some offensive linemen that'll be really intriguing. I don't know if they would go that direction in the first round, like Elijah Vera Tucker. I know they've got some guys at right guard that are duking it out for that position, but Elijah Vera Tucker would be an upgrade over all of them, so I think he should be in consideration. On the defensive side of the ball, is this a spot where we could see a corner? J.C. Horn out of South Carolina would be a great fit. I just don't know that he's going to make it that far at 16. Yeah. I would love to see maybe a pass rusher here. Azeez Ojulari out of Georgia, I think, would be a great fit. 6'2", 250, but even he doesn't look that big, but 34.5-inch arms. He has the length of a 6'5 player, mm-hmm. but he has the height at 6'2", where he can take advantage of winning as the low man and winning leverage. Really explosive off the edge, instinctive, can play the run. Azeez Ojulari, I think, would give them that versatile player in the front seven who can give them some pass rush juice and be a guy they move around a little bit.
Last year at this time, here locally, we were talking about the possibility of the Cardinals being enticed by one of those Alabama receivers in Ruggs and Judy. It didn't go that way. But a year later to have receivers from Alabama, Waddle and Smith, do you think these guys coming out this year are better than Ruggs and Judy were last year?
Yeah, you can certainly make that case. Jalen Waddle, his speed is ridiculous. And I know we said that about Henry Ruggs last year, but Waddle's got a little more polish to him. Mm. Down the field, his ability to go up and high point the football, he shows a little bit more nuance with his routes where he's going to be able to create his own separation based on a little bit of suddenness here, a little bit of patience here, body movements. He understands it a little bit more. I thought he showed a lot of growth as a route runner this past season. And then Devontae Smith, if you can get past the body type, because that's really the only thing that would keep him still being on the board at that 16th pick, is he's over 6 foot and he's 170 pounds. So he's the outlier. There's not many receivers out there that size that are playing at a high level. I mean, you can go back to Marvin Harrison, sure, but are you really going to say that this one player is the exception like Harrison? Some teams will look at that and say, we're not going to bet on the outlier in the first round, where other teams are going to be more than happy to scoop up Devontae Smith and say, I mean, we watched the tape. He's a darn good player. And he started double-digit games each of the last 3 years. So it's not like major injury is something that has followed him. And you watch his film, and he's more competitive and tougher than a lot of 225-pound wide receivers out there. So you could absolutely make the case that both of these – I know it sounds like recency bias, but Waddle, Devontae Smith, you can make the case that both are better than the two Alabama receivers we saw last year.
Dane, great stuff. Really appreciate you spending some time with us getting ready for the draft.
Anytime. Take care, guys.
Thank you, man. Dane Brugler, The Athletic. He put together the beast again this year, and it is a beast. If you want draft information, he's got you covered. He joined us on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line. Coulter Nissan, west of the hassle. Visit CoulterNissan.com. Speaking of the draft, the Arizona Sports Ultimate Mock Draft continues. We're up to pick number 10, and the Dallas Cowboys are on the Woo-hoo. Clock. We'll do it next. Bickley and Murata, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Bickley and Murata.
Bickley and Murata.
98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station.
The 2021 Arizona Sports Ultimate Mock Draft continues.
The Dallas Cowboys will be on the clock momentarily, but before we make the selection, or I make the selection for the Dallas Cowboys, America's team, how about them Cowboys?
How about them Cowboys? How about them Cowboys?
Let us recap what has happened earlier today in the Ultimate Mock Draft.
Previously on the Arizona Sports Ultimate Mock Draft.
The pick is in. Let's go to the podium and see what they're going to do here.
With the seventh pick in the 2021 Arizona Sports Ultimate Mock Draft, the Washington football team selects Trey Lance, quarterback, North Dakota State. The Washington football team mocks General Manager Dan Bickley of Denver and General Manager Dan Bickley of New England. Your official trade, the 19th pick overall, but it's also going to cost Washington the 83rd pick overall, the 211th pick overall, and a second and a fifth next year and a fourth 3 years from now.
With the eighth pick in the 2021 Arizona Sports Ultimate Mock Draft, the Carolina Panthers select Patrick Surtain Jr., cornerback, Alabama.
With the number 9 pick in the Arizona Sports Ultimate Mock Draft, the Denver Broncos take linebacker Micah Parsons, Penn State University.
The Arizona Sports Ultimate Mock Draft.
Ultimate Mock Draft.
Bickley and Murata are on the clock.
I'll admit it, as the GM of the Cowboys.
Yeah, you feel the pressure?
Even though I don't own a yacht.
Yeah.
I did have my eye on a player that I'm a bit surprised came off the board when he did this morning. The eye I had was on Patrick Surtain, the second of Alabama, the corner, but he went number 8 to Carolina. Luckily, for the Dallas Cowboys' sake, there's another corner that we really like still available on the board. And it might have ramifications for a certain team here in the desert later on. But with the 10th overall pick in the Arizona Sports Ultimate Mock Draft, the Dallas Cowboys select J.C. Horn, cornerback from South Carolina.
J.C. Horn, cornerback, South Carolina.
Horn has it all to be a successful NFL corner. His combination of size and length allows him to line up in any type of cover scheme, and he has the type of eye discipline that teams covet. Horn does need to improve his route anticipation and will need to clean up some of his technique at the NFL level. Becoming more consistent in run support will also be important for Horn, but his upside and potential could make him a day one starter for his new team. NFL Comp, Ravens cornerback Jimmy Smith.
And those end so abruptly.
Well, listen, the Cowboys ended up getting a really good wide receiver that fell to them.
Yeah.
And that might be the case with J.C. Horn.
Yeah. He is maybe the highest ranked. Some people have him as the highest ranked corner on the board. The pass defense for Dallas was not that much of a weakness last year. They did have more trouble in against the run defensively. They gave up 158.8 yards per game with the run, but that was just a case where that high on the board, prospect we like that much, best player available, yeah, went there, and you make it work. So next up will be Burnsy in the 3 o'clock. How did this work out? How is Burnsy making the 11th pick for the Giants and then Gambo's making the 12th pick for the Eagles?
That's, yeah,
look, not for nothing. They should, like, totally
they should
swap
that, right?
Yeah, I mean, Doug got the Washington football team, which is his favorite team.
Mm-hmm.
We have the Cardinals pick here, I believe.
We do. I will be making that pick in the noon hour tomorrow.
Look at that.
At number 16.
He's picking for the Cardinals. Well, two corners are gone now.
I know. Only one
Caleb Farley.
Only wide receiver off the board. Ja'Marr Chase went 6th to Miami.
Mm-hmm.
Could one of those Alabama receivers? We just talked to Dane Brugler about that possibility.
Wow. Which one would you go for? It's tough, isn't it?
I absolutely love DeVonta Smith and marveled every time I watched him play.
Mm-hmm.
But Waddle's potential to be used as a Tyreek Hill type weapon
is really
so interesting. I don't think you can go wrong with either one of them. I will say this again. I've made this point now for the last 2 years. There was a time when Jalen Waddle, Devontae Smith, Henry Ruggs, and Jerry Jeudy were all part of the same wide receiver core in college.
Yeah. Isn't that unbelievable?
There was a time where Ja'Marr Chase and Justin Jefferson were part of the same wide receiver core at LSU.
That's crazy, too.
Huh. It's mind-boggling how much talent they had, and it kind of goes back to me to the Mac Jones question, again, stemming off of our conversation with Dane Brugler.
Mm-hmm.
Mac Jones put up unbelievable numbers, but is that offense so advanced and so simplified and so loaded with talent that any quarterback who's plugged into it is going to look that great?
That's what I'd be afraid of it. I mean, and again, you don't want to be blind to the fact that maybe Mac Jones was as good as the skilled players he was playing with. And Mac Jones is really good at throwing accurately and making smart decisions. But again, I've seen this. When you've got a transcendent offense in college, you can make decisions look really easy when you've got that kind of talent around you.
Mm-hmm.
So I would be, I'd be skeptical of it. Write it down, Jarrett.
Yeah, that's going in the montage.
Oh, yeah.
I kind of like that word.
Skeptical?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of skeptical.
It's despicable. Right. So, there's going to be more choices, at least in our mock draft, of wide receivers than corners for the Cardinals.
On the Mac Jones front, and to hear Dane Brugler say he's got Lance as, the third best quarterback, but maybe Mac Jones is the favorite there. Keyshawn Johnson, who hosts the part of the KJZ morning show on ESPN Radio, he doesn't believe that San Francisco is blowing smoke with this whole Mac Jones thing.
I don't think there's a smoke screen. I think they're doing their due diligence. Right, you said it in a roundabout way, but all it is due diligence. They already knew that there was going to be second days for those guys in terms of pro days. They already know that. They've scheduled it way in advance. Hey, Justin Fields is going to do a second, as well as Trey Lance. Here are the dates. Here's what we can do. Here's our schedule. Oh, by the way, let's go see Mac Jones so that we're not caught running around blindfolded. Let's get this thing done. And it's normal. It's not anything that's unnormal for guys to have second, third workouts is what they would be, not necessarily pro days.
The most compelling argument that the 49ers have not made up their mind yet is the fact that they helped script Trey Lance's workout.
Mm-hmm.
Do you go to that extent of assigning a guy, a coach, to work with a kid, script exactly what you want to see if you have made up your mind? No. So, but
it also doesn't guarantee anything the other way.
No,
you could script it. It doesn't mean you saw what you wanted to see.
No, that's exactly right. Yeah. That's exactly right.
Yeah. So, it's getting interesting. We're a little bit more than a week away from the beginning of the NFL draft. Of course, we'll have complete coverage here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Join Ron Wolfley on the eve of the draft as the Cardinals get ready to make their first round selection. Text DRAFT to 620-620 for an invitation to the exclusive Arizona Sports Valley virtual draft experience featuring Wolf and other football guests. Text the word DRAFT to 620-620. The Valley Virtual Series is presented by 72 Sold. Get your price. Coming up next, last night, Chris Paul passed Magic. But what Magic song would you never pass up listening to? All the heavy hits coming up next in Social Studies. Bickley and Murata, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.